Good afternoon. It's 4 o'clock Tuesday afternoon, the second Tuesday of the month. Time for Boat Talk here on Community Radio, WERU-FM Blue Hill and WERU.org. Boat Talk's a call-in show. We'll be getting around to calls right after John gives his boatyard report, and then who knows where we're going to be sailing off to next. So we'll start first with John Johansson, and if you like to give us a call after John's done, write down the number now. It's a new number. It's area code 207 still, but the new number is 618-8819. 618-8819 to get into Boat Talk. But let's launch the boatyard report.
All right. Well, the boatyards are pretty busy up and down the coast. I stopped into, of course, probably every month I do about 20 or 30 boat shops, but I don't do that many boatyard news unless there's some really, you know, some good news in there. Anyways, one of the places I stopped into within the last month was Ellis Boat. And surprisingly, of course, most of you probably know that the Ellis company builds, I think, four models. They have a 20, a 24, a 28, a 32, 36. So that makes five. And they're all glass. Well, it's very interesting when you walk in there and there's a wooden boat, and it was a Bunker and Ellis 39, which was, and I'm sure Alan remembers this boat, called Stardust.
Oh, yeah.
That was Freddie Tower's boat.
Right, in a lot of varnish.
Yeah. And, well, it's in there. It had been sold, I guess, years ago and went to Boston, or in the Boston area. And she's back. They've refastened her. They've also ripped the deck out, or the platform, and they've removed her two engines, which were gas, and now they're going to put in diesels. And they're having Rich Helmke from Bass Harbor Boat come over and kind of give them a hand, because they're good with wood and they understand boats, but they don't know the little nuances working on some of those things. So they've asked him to come over and kind of fill in, because he's done a number of those boats at Bass Harbor Boat.
Yeah, Rich. Yes, Bass Harbor Boats. Yeah. Kind of a hot spot for wooden boats.
Oh, yeah. So she was apart, but she was starting to go back together. If you'd like her Volvo 5.7 Penta engines, they are available. They're going to be replaced with 250 horsepower Yanmars. So she'll be put back together and in the water this spring. Another one that was real interesting was a Billy Joel boat. Billy Joel was well known up on the MDI in the early 2000s. He had one done by Lee Wilbur. That may have been in the 90s. And then he had this Ellis boat done, which they called a Patriot 36. And if you look at her, the only thing that looks like the Ellis part is the hull. I mean, the deck was, and the cabin was taken all to pieces and customized, and actually used a center console, which was kind of interesting. Because to me, it would be kind of hard to see where you wanted to see. But, you know, he's probably running out in open water and, you know, didn't really need to see where the buoys are, like lobster pot buoys and stuff. So anyway, so that boat's in there with a new owner, and she's, you know, getting a facelift and some configuration changes in the cockpit, because the seating's going to get changed. They were talking about switching the helm from the center cockpit up to the bulkhead, but that decided not to be done, that sort of thing, so... Then there was an Ellis 34, 24 in there that they now call a 26, because it's got a what they called a Joe Strong bracket. You've heard of, you know, the regular outboard bracket.
There's, oh, yeah.
Right. Well, that. Joe made this one, so it's Joe Strong bracket. Right? So that they removed her Merc Cruiser inboard, outboard, and that's for sale, too, if you're interested. And they're going to put a 250 horsepower Suzuki on the back of her and see how that goes. So they've done this a couple of times, and it's worked out very well. This boat, with that power, will probably go around 30 knots. Let's see. One thing that Shane did talk about that was kind of interesting, Don, you see once in a while, because Don Ellis was the one that kind of pushed Ellis Boat out into the front there for a while. What, he came in what, the 80s?
He
I think his brother ran the yard before him.
Yep, it was just a little storage yard for a while.
And then Don took over.
Yep.
And but anyway, Shane, his son, is now running the yard, and he was. It's an interesting conversation, and I'm sure you could have this with a number of boatyards up and down the whole coast, and that is giving a quote today, and how scary it is. Because, I mean, it's scary on your end just because you're putting it together and you can see that the prices have dropped, have doubled.
Yeah.
In, what, 4 years?
Yeah, it's sort of unpredictable how much right. They're going to jump.
You know, so, sometimes he says you hand him the thing, the quote, he says, and it scares him off, but he says it doesn't scare him to buy a used boat and actually retrofit it to what they want.
Money.
And they can get out of it for half that and then still have the same boat and, with all new stuff in it. So that's what a lot of them have opted to do. I think we mentioned last time Bruce Farron had launched 42 Muscle Ridge. Bruce Farron, his boat shop is down in Walpole, which is just above South Bristol. And he launched another one in the interim. And this one is another 42 Muscle Ridge. And this one's going out to California. And she was a little more interesting than the one that went to Cape May. The Cape May owner, he decided to put a lot of woodwork in. This one, not a stitch of wood in it at all. Nowhere.
Huh.
That was in the contract. There can't be wood in the boat.
For a wooden boat with no wood.
Right. But so, but he's a sport fish boat. He wanted it easy, clean, that sort of thing.
Yes, I've heard that. Had an estimate, I guess we'll call it, given to the Coast Guard Academy one time when they wanted to have a new training sailboat built. And one of the requirements was to be able to clean the interior with a fire hose.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
This guy, he actually fishes out of around the San Diego area, does a little bit of commercial fishing now. The boat's named is Bloodstripe, which is interesting because anybody who out there is a U.S. Marine would know what that means. One of the, you hit ranks and you gain a blood stripe. Well, you get to walk among your peers and they get to kick you. And so that's one of the ways to get the blood stripe, or that's what you get when you got the blood stripe.
You want to volunteer for that.
Yeah, no, thank you. And so she's got a C-18 cat in her, real nice boat. It had a V-berth down forward. It had a double berth to the starboard side and a full head with an enclosed shower on the port side. The galley was up. It was pretty simple. It was easy to clean. I think even with wood it would have been fine. Mm-hmm. It would have been nice with, a little touch of cherry or teak or something, But
yeah, well varnished, it would be fine.
Right, but that varnish, a lot of times people, they don't like that.
Yeah.
Because it means that it's got a lot of work involved in it if you don't take care of it.
Eventually, yes.
Yeah. But if you keep up with it, it isn't that bad. I'm not sure I talked about this last time. There's a couple of them in here because sometimes I've made a trip. Like today I made a trip down into the Blue Hill area. Hughes and Company, it's a very, very interesting place because they build a lot of houses, but they also have a CNC cutter in there that is used in the boat world, especially like Brooklyn Boatyard, Elry Brown and Doug Highland. They use this stuff because you can get a design from a designer and actually cut a lot of the semi-structure out and build a boat around it, or you can actually get the pieces cut for all the joiner work. And then some of these are five-axis cutters so that they can actually put bevels in, so they can actually do some of the foam core. All of that stuff's all cut, so all you got to do is just place it in.
Stick it in and go.
And goo it up, and you're all set. And, of course, I mentioned that they worked on the 55 down at Brooklyn Boatyard, which is a wheeler. And that I went into today, and last time I was there, which was a month ago, the house was sitting to the left of the boat. Today, it was on the boat and all fitted, and they were working around inside and outside trying to get this big 55-footer done. I'm not sure what the launch date is, They were having some sort of health insurance meeting when I walked through the building, so I didn't bother to ask anybody. But she looks like she's progressing enough so that she'd be going overboard this summer sometime. They also did a boat by Rob Stevens, who's out of Belfast. He's a designer. It's called Stevens and Ware. And he designed a 40-foot sailboat that's going to be done at Artisan, which is in Rockport. That's one they cut. Another one they cut, and they're still working on this one, is a 95-footer that's over at Rockport Marine. That's in the far right bay, and it's a monster, and it's upside down. I'm not sure when they're going to roll her over. And that will be interesting when that does go over. The other boat that's in there, I can't remember what she went aground over in Newport, Rhode Island two falls ago, last fall. Not this past fall, but the fall before. So she's been in there probably almost a little over a year. And she had a big hole in her port side, monstrous hole. And there was basically it wasn't one hole. It was a bunch of holes. But they made it one big hole because they said it was a lot easier to do the cold molded hull by taking out the unaffected areas and making it just one flat area, spot to do. Johansson Boatworks, which is no relation to me, is in West Rockport. And those who travel from Camden down to Warren on Route 90, they're on the left side and pretty prominent and very, very good boat builders. They've got a Fingolf in there, 41, that they're removing the teak deck and about 100 square feet. They love doing this sort of rip out the core and because it's wet, and then they repair that, and then they put the new deck down.
Was it a teak over plywood or teak over cord deck?
Sometimes these are teak over cord deck.
Yeah.
So they're doing this, and they're going to re-core it and then put the glass back on top and then all grip the whole thing. There was a Camden Yacht Club launch in there. She's in to be repowered with a 50 horsepower beta engine. A Hunter 49 sailboat. She has some damage. She's got a new owner, and he's going to upgrade it. He absolutely loves the boat. It's a big, big boat and nice cruising boat. You can tell it's like bringing your house on the water with pointy ends. They store about 100 boats there, but they do a really, really nice business, and there's always something going on there. The landing school, it was announced that the head of the landing school, Sean Fawcett, he actually has a summer place over in Searsport. He's leaving as president, and I'm not sure. It doesn't say who's going to replace him. So that'll be interesting to keep an eye on because that school's kind of an interesting school. It seems to be like any boat school, a hard thing to find your students. And a lot of the people in the industry have tried to figure out ways to get people the students, and when do you go after the student? Do you do it middle school? Do you do it high school? Mm-hmm. You know, to try to find students that would be interested in this sort of occupation, you know, because a lot of them, as we were talking before we went on air, you look at Brooklyn Boatyard, those people just absolutely love what they do. And a lot of them have been there 20, 30, and I think there's a couple of them that have been there 40 years.
Yeah.
And you don't see that much in many industries. Oceanville Boatworks, they've got a 44-foot Calvin hull in there that they're finishing off as a sport fisherman. When I was there last time, they were working on the interior structure. They had basically done all of the fiberglass setup, so all the structure was done. They were all gripping it and fairing it up. And Tim Staples, who's one of the owners, he's actually was working on the joiner work and trying to get that all set up so that they could just snap it into place. And she's expected to go out probably in April. So they've got another 3 or 4 months' worth of work to do on her. They've also got some repair work, but I know a 36 Calvin coming in to have the pilot house sole raised and a winterback installed and some cabinetry work. Billings Diesel and Marine was also going to do a generator and install that, which is going on right now. Another place I stopped into was Samoset Boatworks. That's down in Booth Bay. That's just past, if you go past the antique train museum, there's a industrial park out there, and that's where Samoset Boat Works is. If you go in there, you won't smell the fiberglass resin, as you most of you know, either polyester or vinyl ester.
Both have a distinctive odor.
Yes.
Sure.
Well, with Matt Sledge, who owns Samoset Boat Works, he doesn't use that. He only does epoxy.
Oh, really?
So you walk in and you kind of wonder what's going on here. But, you know, you look around and you can see that there's plenty going on. He's got a 42 muscle ridge that he's, I don't know what your percentage would be, but he's got the engine in, most of the structure under the platform's done, the house is up, the bow thruster's in place. So she's coming along and she's going to be a sport fisherman and she's going to Cape Cod. In the other bay, there's another sport fisherman, also a Muscle Ridge 42, and she's going to Rhode Island. And the only thing that he's done to that one is actually put the bow thruster in. Now, Atlantic Boat I stopped at today, and they had just completed their first launch with twin outboards, 60 horsepower outboards, which is going to Florida. And, of course, being a launch and going to a yacht club that's going to use it to, you know, hustle people around on the water.
Okay.
You got a pretty heavy Coast Guard watch on that.
For sure. Yeah, with all those seats you got to have.
Right. So that she went through a test with no problem at all, and she's getting ready to be shipped within the next few weeks. They also had completed their outboard boat, which was a 26 that they added, I think, 3 feet to her stern with a bracket. Mm-hmm. And she went really well. She lives down in Portland, but she's back up to have the owners had some additions to add to it because, you know, after you use the boat a little bit, you have some ideas that, oh, no, I don't want it there. I need it over there, that sort of mm-hmm. stuff. And then Lucille. And Lucille is a wooden boat, and she's going to actually move over to Eric Dow's boat shop. And she is the first year of the boat school. They built it. This class built it.
The name was familiar. I couldn't remember.
Right. So she is now going to Eric's, and she stays right there in Brooklyn. That's where she's owned. Mm-hmm. And she looks in good shape. I mean, I think the only thing that Eric's going to do is actually refasten the bottom. Then Brooklyn Boatyard I talked about, and then I was at Buxton's. I always stop at Buxton's Boatyard. And Tim Clark from Clark and Isel was there. I think that's how you pronounce the last guy's name. And, of course, most of you that followed the schooner, the oyster schooner that was actually up at Front Street 2 years ago, that's who rebuilt her. Mm-hmm. And so Tim is there helping Peter. Peter wasn't there today. He was out doing a sea trial. But they're working on that 32-foot wooden boat that is basically Peter Cass design, Carol Lowell design, whatever you want to call it, and they're constructing that. The hull is all framed out. The floors are in, and the planks, I would say that probably 80% of the planks are on. And they're planking it. They planked it from the bottom up to about the turn of the bilge, and then they're planking it down from the shear strake down. And he said that was the easiest way to do it so that you would make sure that the upper strake was not a weird-looking plank, because sometimes if you don't plank off the lines right, it doesn't come out looking good.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Anytime.
Now I'm going to skip more worldly for this next one. You're probably aware of this, too, the killer whale attacks that are happening off the Mediterranean, the entrance to the Mediterranean. You heard about that. I have an article from the New York Times November 7th, a little over a month ago, saying that orcas now have sunk 4 boats in that area. It's unnerving sailors, it says. I don't think so. There's a lot of boats that are... to the point now where they have a website where the orca attacks or orca pods have been spotted so people can avoid those areas. It's kind mm-hmm. of a moving target. But the captain of the last boat sunk, says the marine mammals slammed the yacht's rudder for 45 minutes, causing damage and a leak. I assume it was a spade rudder in the leverage there probably cracked it where it goes into the hull and
mm-hmm.
water came in. Couldn't save the boat.
So four for the killer four. Whales and zero for the humans, huh?
No humans so far have been...
Well, your boats are...
At least none that we know of.
Well, did you see the one that the report where one of them was playing rock music?
The safety protocols, they say, are disconnecting the autopilot and staying quiet.
Mm-hmm. Don't play rock music.
Don't play rock. Yeah, other people included have thrown sand into the water, banging on the boat, and one people threw firecrackers in the water. I don't know. That's kind of up in the sky war, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd want to carry firecrackers on the boat.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah, that could get you into trouble. The researchers have pushed back at the idea that the orcas are attacking vessels. Instead, they theorize that the rudders of the boats are becoming playthings for curious young orcas and that the behavior is becoming a learned fad. Spreading through that population.
How's that communicated from one orca to another?
Well, they're pretty smart.
I know that.
Yeah.
The military's got some nice dolphins.
Yeah, that's true. They're trainable, that's for sure. So what I have here at the end of this New York Times article is they are tracking those orcas and have a whole map of their energy. I don't know how you get to that website. I couldn't seem to find it. But the conservationists say that scaring the animals is not a solution. So there we go. I guess we don't have to worry about that. But one thing that Uzzoff note, it's not just in the entrance to the Mediterranean. An orca was reported rammed a yacht some 2,000 miles north off the coast of Scotland. That's a report from The Guardian.
Was there anything off our west coast?
Any orcas?
Well, there's orcas over there, yeah. But I thought that there was also a time when there was a problem with one attacking a boat.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that. It doesn't say anything about that here either, but that's... if you'd like to comment on that too, this is a call-in show. The number here is 618-8819. That's area code 207. 618-8819. Remember last week we were talking about last month. Yes.
I know it felt like a week, right?
Yeah, could be, yes. We were talking about the Hinckley that was taken apart and the insides were put into a pile and they had to put them back together and taken apart because the floor stringers had come loose from the hull on one side. While I was working on that, I was kept thinking, how would they get loose? What caused it to come loose? They were put together with polyester saddles. You probably know what I'm trying to talk about there, where they take polyester resin and boat cloth and sort of glass around where the stringer comes over and meets the hull. So when the fiberglass is all hardened, it's sitting in this sort of U-shaped saddle on the side of the hull. One of the features of polyester especially is that it doesn't stick really well to wood, especially smooth wood like these 2x6 stringers were. So I had a discussion with another boat captain, another long time ago boat captain, delivery person, who was delivering off the west coast of Florida, headed to Marco Island, about a little ways up the west coast there. And the approach of that is quite shallow. There's 8-foot, 9-foot areas, pretty much the whole area going in there. And he had a 6-foot keel. So he figured he was okay until a Coast Guard cutter started coming down, heading pretty much at him, not exactly at him, but going to go by fairly close, throwing a pretty big wake. So he didn't like that. He flipped on the bird, but that didn't really help because after the boat went by, the waves and trough from that picked the boat up, and then when it got down to the bottom of the trough, it would bang, hit the bottom. It did that, two and a half times, really hard bangs on that. And the whole boat shudders. So I'm thinking possibly that happened to this boat where the stringers come apart, because when a boat bangs on the bottom, it's pushing the keel up, which I'm calling it the balloon effect, would tend to want to push the sides of the boat out away from the stringers. And like mm-hmm. I said, it doesn't hold really well to smooth wood. So I'm thinking that's what happened. The sailors out there will say, well, it's got a mast going down to the keel, and the mast is held down by the rigging down to the side of the boat. That would support it, but the area where the stringers came loose was aft of the mast, probably 5 or 6 feet. So I think
perhaps, right over the keel?
Right over the keel, yes. Yep. And that's where the...
Any keel damage that you could see?
I didn't actually even look at that at the time, and no, it probably had several layers of anti-fouling on it over the...
Fill in the gaps.
Yeah, yeah. It had a leaking through hull, too, somewhere in the area. I wonder if that might be correlated, too. But that's my theory as to how the stringers came loose. If you have a different opinion, maybe there's some marine architects listening saying I'm full of a whale. The number to call is 618-8819. We take any sort of discussion. It doesn't matter really what you want to talk about. As long as it's wet, it'll probably work for us. 618-8819. So what else do I want to talk about here?
Oh, you had something there on the dash.
Oh, yeah, right. Last month we had a call asking about ghost ships. And you mentioned the one that had been seen off of Portland. It was the ghost ship Dash, if you want to talk about it there.
This is a vessel that was built in Freeport, which I didn't remember last time. She was a schooner that was built in Freeport in 1813, and she was leaving to do another privateering cruise. And she went out in a storm, and I can't remember where she went out because she was from Harpswell. And supposedly, she disappeared, and no one has ever seen her since, and there's been, no wreckage has ever been found of
her.
No
trace, no nothing, just gone.
And but over the years, there's in like thicker fog and all of this, sometimes people think they've seen her in the fog bank, and so that's how, some of this is getting referenced. You kind of wonder, if there's anything else involved in why you see these things. But I've never heard too much about ghost ships. The only other one that was always a mystery was the Mary Celeste. And that was the vessel that was found. She was on her way going across the Atlantic.
Right.
And she was found with everything set perfectly in the boat, but there was nobody on board.
Yeah, no sign of a storm or anything. It was just like...
gone.
Everybody just left.
And the only thing that one sea captain said at the time that makes a lot of sense was she was carrying stuff that was explosive, and that they thought that they had either smelled something that was a foul or something was going on, and they got into the boat, the lifeboat, and the boat sailed away from them, mm-hmm. and they couldn't catch up to her.
Yeah.
And then they never caught up to her. And that's a very good possibility, because why else? I mean, there was no foul play that you could see. It looked like somebody, they just walked off the boat.
Yeah.
So that's a good explanation, but,
Well, you think they'd want to tie on to a long painter first.
Well, yeah, but if it's an explosive cargo and you're only 15 feet astern, you might go with it.
A couple hundred feet or something.
Right.
Yeah.
But sometimes you just don't think of that. And, of course, they had all the sails set.
Huh.
It may have been a good idea to drop the sails and then get the boat.
That's true, too, yeah.
But when you're in a rush and you think the boat's going to blow up, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
premature panic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always been a big controversy. I know there's a book that was published on that by the Marine Society of Salem, Massachusetts, back in the 20s. That was one of their books.
Huh.
It's on the Mary Celeste.
So I also mentioned that I had a photograph of what I call ghost ships, where they just dispose of old boats at sea, just kind of sort of kick them out there and open the scuppers and let them go. I put it into the boattalk.org website. We have a website there. So there's a new entry if you'd like to see the picture of the actual what I call a ghost ship. It's boattalk.org.
Well, you know how many ships were abandoned back in – I got a lot of reports from the 1880s because I did a lot of research in the – it's a really interesting publication. It was called the Maine Mining Journal originally. It started in 1880, and then it became the Maine Industrial Journal. Oh, yes. And it is incredible. If you want to know about what some of these small towns were like in the state – this is an incredible resource. You can find it at the Bangor Public Library. I think they had the original copies. And then the University of Maine up at Orono has it on microfilm. And unfortunately, sometimes people who use microfilm aren't very careful, so it's got scratches in it. But I think the one at the Bangor Public Library is the best. And I use that a lot, and I transcribed probably about 20 years of it. It published for 38 years. It went out of business in 1918. But the stuff that's in there, and there's references to vessels that were, you know, abandoned and set free that floated all over the Atlantic, and then they tried to keep track of them. And some of them, they ended up floating out there for a year or two.
Wow.
And there's pretty good references of some of those vessels. Huh. Because it was basically a menace to navigation because you hit one of them at night.
Especially at night. I'm sure
you can't
no
see
lights.
Them.
Yeah. Huh. Oh, 618-8819. If you'd like to join this conversation, drift whatever direction you might want to take us, that's great.
Yeah, we're easily led astray.
So
we're easily led astray.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Off course discourse, we call it.
Yep.
So what do we want to go to next? I got done with the orcas. We had an orca in Bass Harbor when I was there probably 30, 40 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised to see one. First, because I thought they were pretty much offshore kind of animals. And second, it was just one orca. Usually they're in a group.
Mm-hmm.
This guy came in, swam around the head of the harbor where we were, and one of the guys who worked there hopped in his kayak and went paddling out to him. I hope he's not hungry.
Yeah, right. Yeah, sometimes the worst idea is the first one.
Yeah. So anyway, he swam around for a while, and then the Swan's Island ferry left, and he followed it out.
Hmm.
I wonder if he's begging for food or whatever, but never saw him again.
Huh. You know, there used to be a whaling factory in Bass Harbor.
A whaling factory? No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was 1800s, 1880s. I think I've got references to that somewhere.
Huh.
I know there's some people that have written articles on the whaling in Maine, but Maine didn't do much whaling. That was pretty much started in Nantucket and ended and went to, New Bedford did a lot and New London.
They used a lot of Maine-built boats, though.
Yeah, but the town I actually grew up in until I was about 15 built the most. That was Mattapoisett, or Rochester it was really called. Dartmouth built a number of them. Of course, one from Dartmouth is still alive. That's Charles W. Morgan. I think she was built in 42. She's been around a long time.
Hmm.
Plus, it cost, I don't know how many millions to rebuild her, 5 years ago, six years ago?
We did an interview with a friend of mine who was working on it at the time.
Did you?
Yeah. I'll save it for the next show. I have a little talk with him. It's pretty funny, actually, about what he was working on.
Yeah, that was a really interesting project to do what's his name? Dana Usen was head of Mystic Seaport Shipyard at the time. And then there was another guy, Schnedeker. And he was kind of overseeing that project. But, you know, it's a massive, massive rebuild. And if you really want to, if you're a model builder and you got nothing else to do this winter, Blue Jackets has got an incredible model. And it's basically the middle, wouldn't say it's a third, but maybe a quarter of the vessel. But it includes the Triworks, which is the basically the oven that they cook the blubber in.
Oh.
And you get to build it brick by brick.
Wow. And,
but you also do the structure, the whole hull structure. So you probably got, maybe 6 inches of the hull. You know, I don't know what that works out into feet because I'm not sure the scale. But, you know, you build the decks and the whole idea, and you put the barrels in there and stuff, yeah. I watched Al Ross is one of the model builders and does most of the models for Blue Jackets. And for those that don't know, Blue Jackets is right across from Hamilton Marine in Searsport. The lighthouse across the street, that's Blue Jackets.
Yeah.
And if you're really crazy and you're really kind of bored this winter, it's a great place to kind of go in and look around and see what they've got. Because there's some models in there that you go, really? Because, you know, I've got the one of Portland. And I don't know how many hours it would take to build that. But it's a lot easier today than it used to be because all of that stuff is pre-cut. And all you got to do is, you know, of course, a lot of patience so it's fit right and done right. You know, a lot of people just throw things together like when they did when they were kids, you know, with plastic models.
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah. And but they've got a lot of stuff that's cut out of, what is it, Britannia pewter that's – I guess that's actually cast, but they also do some laser cutting of the metal. So it's really, really nice. When you're done with a model like of the Portland, I don't know how many of you know, but the Portland was the one that was named after the Portland. Well, the Portland Gale was named after the Portland because that's when she sank. 26-27 November 1998. And she went down off Cape Cod. She's on Stellwagen Bank. So if you look up the steamer Portland, and it'll take you to Stellwagen Bank, and there's actually a lot of video of her on the bottom. She's in about 200 feet of water.
Oh, this is a sidewheeler, right?
Yeah. And that was some of the argument, and that's why sidewheelers died, is because they figured that in the storm, because she was in what they call the perfect storm, storm had come over the top of the United States and went up from the Caribbean and met right off Cape Cod. And they figured that maybe what happened is one wheel grabbed and one didn't in the trough and spun her sideways and rolled her, although she's sitting upright.
Well, no telling.
And there was no survivors. There was about 175 people on her. And the problem was that her whole manifest of anybody that was on board with her.
Yeah.
And they changed that the next time or right after that. But that's not the worst one. You go to the General Slocum, and that's even worse. That was one of the cruise ferry boats in New York Harbor, and she was loaded with about 1,400 kids and mothers, and she went up the river and caught on fire.
Right. Yeah, I think somebody wrote a song about that, maybe even Bob Dylan. But
could be.
Yeah, going up to a
And you know who fired the
– picnic.
Exactly. And you know who fired the steamboat inspectors? The President of the United States, Theodore Roosevelt. And he'd be the one that would do that.
Yeah. Well, while we're on such a bad subject, I can talk a little bit about the Civil War. Sternwheeler was going up the Mississippi. I'm trying to remember the Sultana.
There's whole books on that one.
That was terrible. It was overloaded with a whole bunch of Union soldiers trying to get back home.
Weren't they from the prison of war?
There was prisoners of war. There was all kinds of, and some husbands and wives, you know, the wives came down to be with them and went back. And
boiler exploded? The boiler exploded?
Yeah, the boiler blew up because they were, like I said, overloaded and trying hard to go back upstream, and pressure valve didn't work right.
Yeah, but that was common. You know, you go back in the old papers from the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and number one, they'd race, which that got them in a lot of trouble because they wanted to be the first into port because that, you know, was
pushing the limits.
Well, yeah, and it was also got you the next basic customers. because you were the fastest, you were going to get them there quicker. But they also didn't realize that, you know, like you said, the boiler gauges weren't the best of designs, and they didn't work all the time. Yeah. So if you pushed your luck, well, how about the one off here, the city of the circus ship, the Royal Tower, 1836, October. And that one there, well, they had an elephant on the deck, and the weight of the elephant kind of put it down on top of the boiler. But the worst thing was the boiler ran out of water because the engineer wasn't paying attention, and he started the deck on fire.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, and right, that's all under the elephant.
Yeah. Well, the best story about the elephant was they were building a raft on the boat to try to get to shore, and they've got the raft into the water, and the elephant thought it was the greatest way for him to make it to shore, so he jumped on it.
And me first, hurry.
Yeah, and of course, neither of them made it to shore, the elephant or the raft.
Yeah.
But that's what got me started with, because I think at the time I saw that, I was working at the Bangor Daily News. This would have been in the early 80s, and I was reading the old newspapers, and that was one of the first accounts I came across. Because I started in the beginning, and that's about when I think the Wigan Courier, because that's what its early name was that was one of the first articles in that newspaper, was the loss of the Royal Tower. Because she was coming out of Canada with a circus on board.
Well, that reminds me of Mark Twain's first experience. He started out as a reporter, too, if you remember, and he was... sent to the Sandwich Islands, which is now Hawaii.
Yep.
And the very day that he arrived, a boat arrived with, I think it was five or six people who had been drifting in a long boat in the ocean, who were finally saved after many days. And Samuel Clemens stayed up overnight to write dispatch that was going to go out on a boat the next morning describing the circumstances. And it takes him probably four or five pages to write this. This is very interesting to read. As far as I know, the only place you can read it is in his autobiography. He wrote two big, thick autobiographies. And go to the library, look it
is
up.
Is the first one red or of a red color?
Mine has a paper cover on it. I can't.
Oh, yep, okay. Because so, yep. There was three. I've always found the first volume of one of a book on Mark Twain.
Uh-huh.
And then, but I've seen three volumes, and you can tell they were all for the same thing, but it may not be by the same author.
Huh. No, this one's his autobiography.
Yeah, so. But is it recent?
I'm going to say probably within the last 15 years or
yeah,
so.
Yeah, it's probably the same one. I think there's three volumes to it, but I've never – most of the time you only find the volume, first volume.
Huh. Yeah, I have two, so.
Well, you're up on everybody else.
Yeah. Very interesting story.
Well, he's always got some interesting stories.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing.
He was always bailed out by Henry Huddleston Rogers. He was one of the robber barons of the early 1900s. I think he was Standard Oil with Rockefeller. But he always went to Henry Huddleston Rogers for money when he was destitute.
Yeah, seemed to be part of his biography.
You know,
talks
writers
about
are,
that too. Yeah.
Yeah, writers aren't very well off.
Yeah. Some of the, he talked about a strange deal that he got swindled into. I can't remember just what it was, but it ended up being a complete flop, and he lost money in that.
He has some great quotes.
Oh, yeah.
He was probably one of the best at quotes.
Yep. Yep.
You know?
So, 618-8819. You can join the conversation here at Boat Talk. We got 17 minutes left, so plenty of time to talk about most anything decent anyway. Boat racing season is over.
Yep.
I still maintain that there is a way to put fins. What do they call them? Sort of foils, that's a word I'm looking for. Foils. underneath the boat to lift them up a little bit to give them less drag, not totally out of the water like America's Cup boats, but enough so they can.
Did you run this by Glenn Holland?
No, I haven't yet, but yeah, I think I would pretty talk him into that.
If it make his boat go faster, he'd try it.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. Well, you're limited by your water intake, so you'd have to figure out how to pick up waters while you're doing that. But
have you been watching the America's Cup?
No, I haven't.
Well, on Facebook it pops up once in a while, and that's all I get to see. But, you know, all these countries now, I think they're headed to Spain, and that's where the Cup will be held.
Mm-hmm.
And American Magic, which is from the New York Yacht Club, seems to do okay. It doesn't seem to be the top boat yet. I think there's a huge, huge learning curve for all of these boats.
Okay. All right.
We got one.
Yeah, we have a phone call. So let's go to Wayne from Centerville. Good morning, Wayne. Welcome to boat. Or afternoon, Wayne.
Hey, yeah, good afternoon. Well, yeah, Wade, like Wade in the water. I would kind of revisit that ghost ship thing. With this day and age, all of the satellites and all the ability to take pictures, wouldn't that kind of almost eliminate, could they track or find or something along that line?
Well, I was wondering that too, with the reports of this ship being sighted off of somewhere close to Portland. You'd think that a radar would pick that up if it was a real thing. But
yeah, today you could. But back then, but it's, you
right,
know.
Right, right.
But back then, it, you know, what they think they saw, you know.
Yeah, well, when was the last sighting that we, well, I don't know.
I think, well, it was always way, way back in time before any of the
before
radar.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, today, and it would also be interesting to map the bottom of the ocean. Now, most of us here in the, you know, understand that the United States probably has probably the best mapping system of the bottom of the ocean because they want to know where they can hide a submarine, or maybe some of the other countries do the same thing. But, you know, and Ballard probably did more looking around on the ocean than most people have done.
They probably know where some of these ghost ships are.
Yeah, and they don't talk about some of it. I think they disputed some of the stuff that was done in the Bermuda Triangle. There was a show the other day that came on, and I didn't watch the whole thing, but they were disputing that one of the, either an aircraft or a boat that went down. Oh, I know it was a sailboat. In fact, they interviewed Phil LaFrance from down in Brooklyn on it, and all of a sudden it disappeared, but they couldn't figure out all of the details of it. But they came to him because of the type of boat it was, and, you know, he had sailed that type of boat. It was a sailboat that came out of, I think it was out of Larchmont, New York, and she was sailing the Bermuda race, I believe, and she was headed to Bermuda, and she never made it. They have found the boat. They've pretty well documented that the boat that they found was her.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Well,
that
goes back to, like, back into in the 70s, when I think it was Muir, that wealthy somebody that they say he disappeared on a boat in the Bermuda Triangle and never found anything about it.
Was he with a crew?
I believe. I mean, it was Muir. He was some wealthy. I don't remember now. I don't know if he was.
That could be the same one I saw. There's a big story on it on one of the Histories, Mysteries, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. This was a big deal back in the 70s because he was a real wealthy guy. I want to say he was a very benevolent guy. Did a lot of neat stuff. I don't recall where what his work or whatever was, but it was a big deal that he disappeared.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and it was interesting because they said that the boat itself was a really well-designed boat, and he had a lot of experience. But a lot of times that doesn't make any difference out there. You can do everything right and still be wrong.
Well, you know, being a boater from Ohio, when I moved up here 10, 11 years ago, and for 10 or 11 years, I keep saying, boy, I'd like to get a boat. But then I go out with other friends and I'm out on the ocean. I'm like, but it's different out here.
Well, it's also better if your friend owns the boat.
Yeah.
Well, the expenses are a lot less.
I'm just good with that, you know.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. There's a whole, I mean, yeah, rivers and streams and lakes, not a problem. Ocean, I don't know.
Well, I don't know about the lake one. You go up on the Great Lakes and it can get really, really nasty on the Great Lakes. Ask the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. But, you know, you're
well,
right.
Thanks, guys.
Yep.
Thank you, Wade. Wade gave me a little thought that went right straight through my head and out the other ear. Now,
whoops.
So, 618-8819, if you'd like to join the conversation here, too. We was talking about ghost ships of various sorts.
Well, how many boats have disappeared without a trace? There's a lot of them that have disappeared. But usually there's an explanation.
Yeah.
Usually, you know, like even in the old newspapers, they actually would figure out when the storms were coming through, and they could figure out the ship was out there at that time and in that area, and that something went wrong and they ended up on the bottom.
Yeah. Oh, well, you remember the World War II battleship? No, not battleship. It must have been a destroyer or a cruiser named Indianapolis.
Yep.
Yep. That one, well.
What was his name?
Yeah, that disappeared, and nobody knew about it because nobody knew where the boat was.
Well, they weren't supposed to.
Yeah, it was still under orders.
Yeah, she was carrying the parts for the atomic bomb
right.
to Ulithi.
Yeah. So we have another phone call. We'll go to Matt in Monhegan. Hello, Matt. Welcome to Boat Talk. You there, Matt?
All the time. Oh. Yeah, you hear me?
Yep.
There you go. Go ahead.
Floating around all the time. You remember that honey barge? It was a trash sewer barge out of New York City, floated around the Atlantic here for. I went back and forth across the Atlantic two or three times. They finally found it, like out off of Puerto Rico somewhere, towed it in, and we found a navigation aid. It was a big steel buoy that was from George's Harbor on Bermuda. I found it right off of Monhegan when I was hauling. The thing's a foot and a half in diameter and 20 feet long, tapered on the top. And it had enough chain on it to make two complete moorings out of. It was covered with gooseneck barnacles. You know, drifted all the way from there. Nobody hit it. Came by Friendship and these guys steaming down below the island every morning at 22, 24 knots. Nobody hit the thing. It's just amazing.
You know? Lucky.
Was it just rusty or was it any color?
It's in good shape. It was all painted red and the chain let go. It had a 3/4-inch chain went down a 1.5-inch chain. The 1.5-inch chain was about, I don't know, 5 fathoms of that, and then you could see it got thin, parted off where it was coming and going out of the sand of the shell bed in St. George Harbor. But I know that's what it was. I've been in there a few times and I recognized the buoy and I Googled it and there's nothing anywhere around. In the United States, it wasn't marked with any United States numbers or anything else. It was pretty sure it came from Bermuda, possibly the Bahamas somewhere.
Huh.
Yeah, came up the stream.
So how is it out on Monhegan today?
Well, I came in before this last little breeze. We've been lobstering out there. We've been doing okay.
Yeah.
It's quiet. There aren't many people there.
It's pretty wild, though, isn't it, with the wave action?
Oh, yeah. It's like living on a big boat that can't sink. That's what I like about it.
Well, I looked. I went. Where was I? Yesterday. Was today Tuesday? Yeah, yesterday. Yeah. I ran up through Round Pond, and of course I can look across, and it was pretty wild. You could see a lot of, you know, waves crashing on something out there. So.
Yeah. Well, it was probably they were giving a lot more southeast than we got. You know, and then it never really had that easterly component. It came to the south. The southwest, and then it started blowing out of the southwest for a little bit, and then it came westerly. So you didn't really have enough wind and tide to make a big sea up, you know.
Yeah. So how long have you been fishing out of Monhegan?
34 years.
Yeah. So did you know a Billy Abbott?
No, Billy Abbott was before me.
Oh, the pilot. He used to get stuck out there every once in a while. He'd get stuck out there 2 or 3 days. He was the pilot on the Penobscot River. He was a character and a half. Go ahead.
I ran the pilot boat out there, taking pilots out for quite a while. Murray Gray was the last one that I really worked with.
Yeah. Yeah. But Bill graduated from the academy, I believe, in 45, because he wasn't there very long before he got called home to run the pilots on the river.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because so, he took over for his father.
Yeah, we put some pilots on out there in some absolutely savage weather.
Oh, I believe it.
I wouldn't do it now. They come down. They run down from Portland now. I mean, from Rockland, they got their own pilot boat.
Yeah. And it's a lot bigger, too, isn't it?
I don't think it's that much bigger. It's fast. It's a twin-screw, purpose-built boat, so you're not trying to do a lobster boat, you know.
Yeah, I think it was a Gladding and Hearn build out of Rhode Island or because I think, no, Gladding and Hearn's Massachusetts. I think it's Fall River or on the other side, Somerset.
Not the one they got now. It's a glass boat.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Twin screw glass boat. It was the last time I saw it. I remember when they got that one. I don't know. They might have got another one. So I don't really keep in touch with them.
So the fishing's been halfway decent?
Yeah, it's been a decent year.
Good.
You know, nothing to set the world on fire. But
well, that's good.
Making a living.
Well, it's all that counts. Especially in this world.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's better than dealing with a bunch of tourists, that's for sure.
Yep.
So, all right, well, you Paul, good night. Appreciate you being here.
Well, you too.
All right, thank you. Well, we're just about sailed through the whole hour, but, well, another 3 minutes left.
Oh, she
anyway.
Gave me two.
Yeah, three or two, but you can
two.
Make, yeah, 2 minutes. If you want to be, ask a really quick question and get a really quick answer, you can give us a call. But
nah.
No, the engineer is saying, no, that's not good. Good. So it's been another interesting show, John. I used to have everything's pretty much organized for what I was going to be doing for Boat Talk before I got here, but in my old age, I've lost my organizational abilities. And we still seem to be able to.
Well, now
to
that I'm a boatyard owner, I have no organization.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'll remind you again, too, about the Boat Talk website. That's boattalk.org, where you can see some pictures. And actually, I think you can make comments to Boat Talk, too, or even suggestions for things you'd like to talk about. So, thanks to Amy Brown down in the engine room for keeping things going. This is Alan Sprague and John Johansson. Thanks for
signing off.
Listening. over and under.